Thank you very much. So good morning, everyone. So today, I'll be presenting a replication study, entitled Challenges of Using Data Logs to Validate Phishing Detection and Billing Metrics. The first author couldn't be here, so I'm presenting in her stead. And all of this work was performed at CMU, and so none of this work or my statements represent Google or Alphabet Incorporated, so please don't sue us or misrepresent us in the press or any of that stuff. Okay, let's go on with it. So as many of you know, phishing attacks can come in a variety of forms, but our work focuses on phishing emails. So phishing emails tend to trick users into sharing their credentials, installing malware, and sending money to attackers. So these attacks vary in complexity. So for example, spear phishing emails often use personal information about the victim to make emails seem more legitimate, while more broadly distributed phishing campaigns may rely on urgency and or authority to persuade victims to get money or information from them. So to defend against these attacks, it's important for organizations to understand people's susceptibility to phishing and how to influence people's susceptibility, as in to make them less susceptible. So growing concern over phishing risk is sort of the driving need for timely and cost-effective metrics to evaluate individuals' vulnerability to phishing. So a simple test with predictive validity could help to guide interventions against phishing, like the one published last year by my co-authors, Canfield, Fischhoff, and Davis. In short, Canfield et al. Conducted an MTurk experiment to, one, demonstrate a method to measure people's ability to detect phishing, and two, they investigated which task factors influenced people's phishing susceptibility. So the work I'm presenting today assesses the validity of this phishing detection task developed by my co-authors, which I'll refer to as the MTurk study because they use participants from Amazon's Mechanical Turk. So in this MTurk study, participants evaluated 40 different emails, half of which were phishing. So for each email, each user performed two tasks. The behavior task question asked participants what they would do if they received the example email, and the detection task question asked participants if they thought this was a phishing email or not. So the behavior and detection questions were used to calculate the metrics for each user. Now, in our replication, we used the exact same procedure and materials as in this experiment from the original study. So both studies measured four performance metrics using signal detection theory, or SDT. So in short, signal detection theory is a mathematical technique to separate users' sensitivity, which is their ability to correctly distinguish between legitimate and phishing emails, from their response bias, which is their tendency to treat emails as phishing. Now, signal detection theory in this context can be more useful than other metrics, such as basic accuracy, because signal detection theory accounts for the trade-offs that people make between false negatives, so when a user fails to realize that an email is phishing and potentially falling for the attack, and false positives, whereby a user mistakenly labels a legitimate email as phishing. So in our replication of the MTurk study, we leveraged the Security Behavior Observatory, which is a multi-year effort to collect longitudinal data on a broad spectrum of participant and computer behaviors in the wild. So in short, the way this works is essentially SBO participants first install our data collection software on their home machines, which then send the computer and user behavioral data to the SBO data collection server. This data is then transferred to the data analysis server, which is only accessible to authorized researchers from within our institution's network. So now, in addition to collecting this data from participants' machines over long periods of time, we can also send participants online experiments and surveys that then compare the response of those surveys and experiments to the security state of participants' machines, and see how that changes over time, which is exactly what we did for this project, at least in terms of phishing. So The present study aims to assess the phishing detection test in three ways in terms of replicability, construct validity, and predictive validity. If we can show that the findings are robust and have evidence of validity, then the phishing susceptibility test could have a lot of practical applications. And if not, well, then at least this study will at least improve our understanding of what influences phishing susceptibility. So to assess replicability, we perform a replication using the same study materials, but with a different sample. So the original study used Amazon's Mechanical Turk. Ours uses the Security Behavior Observatory. To assess construct validity, we examine the correlation with a validated measure of security intentions. In this case, we use the Security Behavior Intention Scale, or CBIS, by Eagleman and Peer. And to assess predictive validity, we perform logistic regressions using the metrics from the phishing susceptibility test to try and predict the real-world outcomes on participants' SBO machines. So I'll now highlight some findings related to each of these three aspects. So our SBO sample was recruited from local participant pools in the mostly Pittsburgh area, which turned out to be older and more educated than the original MTurk sample. Now, this is partially because we believe age and education are correlated, and this is possible because younger participants simply had not finished college yet. We recruited 132 SBO participants to participate in the phishing study, and 98 completed the entire thing, which is a 74% response rate. We then removed five participants who had sent too little SBO data for us to make any meaningful conclusions, which then brings us down to the 93 participants shown here. So we wanted to evaluate whether our replication was successful or not. We decided to use four methods to do so. So one of the primary limitations that we had in the study was statistical power, because the replication sample size was limited by the number of SBO participants. So these four methods try to balance that out. So comparing effect sizes and confidence intervals are likely to support that the study was replicated, at least when there's low statistical power in this case, since reduced precision is associated with a lower sample. Now, in contrast, again, when there's a low statistical power, the hypothesis test results are less likely to support that the replication was successful, because it's less likely that you'll find the coefficient is different from zero. Now, the last approach that we use is to combine both studies into a single regression analysis to see if the findings are robust. Now, unfortunately, we don't have time to present the regression analysis today, so we'll just look at the parameter estimates. So first, we compared the overall phishing detection performance between the MTurk samples from the original study and the SBO samples. So these graphs illustrate the individual estimates of sensitivity, which is on the x-axis, and the response bias on the y-axis for each participant in both the original MTurk sample, which is on the two top ones, and the SBO samples for our own study, which is at the bottom. So the two top charts show the MTurk participants' estimates, and the bottom two are the SBO, yep, which I just said. And so by basically comparing the MTurk to the SBO estimates for each task, we can see that the distributions look fairly similar. And indeed, we did not find any significant differences between the two study samples when we used t-test or comparing confidence intervals or effect sizes. More details are, of course, in the paper. But overall, this suggests that the findings from the MTurk study are robust to a new sample, and we can extend the conclusions beyond just the original MTurk sample. Next slide, please. Thank you. So next, we assess construct validity by comparing performance on the Security Behavior Intention Scale, or CBIS, which was developed and validated by Eagleman et al. Our users completed the CBIS separately from the phishing study, so we don't expect that their performance in the phishing study was affected by having completed the CBIS, because they would do it when they would enroll into the SBO originally or at a different time. So the CBIZ has several different scales related to password generation, device securement, and updating. But for this study, we focus on the proactive awareness subscale shown here, which was most related to detecting phishing emails. The reason for this is because Egelman et al.'s validation of the scale found that participants who correctly identified suspicious websites also scored highly on the proactive awareness subscale. Now, for our study, we expected that users with higher scores on the proactive awareness subscale would have higher sensitivity and lower response bias, meaning that they would correctly detect more phishing emails. So the only significant correlation with the CBIZ was with behavior response bias. So this means that participants with a lower behavior response bias scored higher on proactive awareness. So essentially, users who tended to avoid clicking on links in emails were also more likely to report being suspicious of links. So this just suggests that participants were acting on their computer security intentions in our experiment for the behavior task, which most closely resembles reality. We found no other correlations between the SDT parameters and the CBIZ responses, which suggests that the sensitivity or ability to differentiate between phishing and legitimate emails is not related to security intentions. So next we assess predictive validity. So we examined four security outcomes on participants' home machines using different types of data, including whether the users visited malicious URLs in the browser data or the network packet data. We also measured the presence of malicious software and malicious files on their machines. There were some technical issues with how reliable the count data was, so we performed logistic regressions whereby the outcome was a 1 or a 0, depending on whether there was evidence of a negative event on their machines. We also examined covariates that potentially predicted whether a negative event occurred. We focused on covariates to describe exposure and risky behavior with their machines. So we had two main hypotheses for this analysis. First, we expected that users who were more susceptible to phishing in the phishing detection test would be more likely to experience negative events in real life. Second, we expected that users who used their computer more often and engaged in more risky behavior would also be more likely to experience negative events. Here's a slide with a bunch of numbers. But basically, the main takeaway is that we found no relationship between the SBO participants' measured susceptibility to phishing and the negative outcomes on their machines. Now, interestingly, we did find that our estimates of exposure did suggest that users who used their computers more were more likely to experience a negative outcome. And interestingly, we also found that men were more likely to visit a malicious URL in the network packet data, which includes ads, images, and other elements of web pages. So more research is needed to understand these particular effects. But ultimately, there was no evidence of predictive validity in the phishing susceptibility test, and it did not predict any of the negative events that we observed on participants' machines. So in conclusion, we found evidence of replicability in the sense that the MTurk and SBO samples did perform similarly. We also found some evidence of construct validity for the behavior task in the sense that users who reported being more suspicious of URLs were also less likely to click on links in the experimental task. But we found no evidence of predictive validity. So we have a couple of potential explanations for the lack of predictive evidence of predictive validity. So the first explanation could be that the signal detection theory task did not reflect phishing susceptibility, which we feel seems unlikely given that the other results that we had are in line with other phishing detection literature. So the second possible explanation is that the signal detection theory measures were biased. And this has some merit. From the literature, we would expect that the base rate and priming, in other words, the fact that users knew that they were supposed to be looking for detection for phishing emails, could have biased the results. But we would expect that the relative results to be consistent. So for example, users who are good at detecting phishing emails in real life won't be worse in the experimental task than other users who would be less good. So we don't think that that would affect our findings here. The third explanation, that the SBO tasks did not reflect human performance, is also convincing. One of the challenges in the study was to differentiate between how technology protects users versus how they protect themselves. So other measures, like warning data in browsers, which shows malicious URLs that users tended to visit, rather than just the ones that users actually succeeded in visiting, could start to get at this. But unfortunately, we observed very few browser warnings in the SBO data. So as time goes on and more SBO data is collected, we may be able to improve this particular analysis. And the last possible explanation that the SBO measures are noisy is certainly also true. There were issues with sort of missing data. It was ambiguous if there were multiple users of a single computer. And there were unresolved issues of the timing of events and so on. And so future analysis should try and resolve these issues. What it comes down to is that reality is complex, but even so, we hope that that combining laboratory experiments like this phishing study and real-world measures like in the SBO to learn more about phishing susceptibility and security behavior more broadly will sort of continue to further advance the field. And that's all I have for you today. Thank you for your attention, and if you have any questions, let me know. Thank you.
So my naive intuition is that maybe if you weren't seeing more browser warnings, that the people who are already more attuned to phishing are somehow behaving in other ways that are leading to, in a sense, fewer opportunities per unit of time using their computer. Wild speculation, but that's my intuition.
Very interesting. Sort of just that they kind of know how to avoid it before they even get there, kind of thing. Yeah. Just their browsing behavior avoids it. That's interesting. That's an interesting idea.
Right. Think they about may that. Be Thank you. Signing up for fewer other things, so actually just getting, getting less fishes.
Yeah. Yep. Interesting. Thank you.